6:20. And we'll do a roll call, please.
Stu Martin here.
Kathy Wigan here.
Don Grinder here.
And the mayor's here. Pledge allegiance. Roger, would you lead us, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. We will open it to public comments at this time. Are there any public comments? Hearing none, I will proceed to the city manager's performance evaluation. What I would like to do is to say that how's our city manager doing? In general, we are pleased with his overall performance. We have identified some areas that we would like him to focus on with the council, and we are in agreement on these areas. And the summary itself is he meets job standards with a plus. And future goals and objectives, learn to place yourself, assist the council in developing a process to ensure that projects and work activity fits within the council goals and objectives and adopted budget, attend more regional and statewide training for yourself and staff, assist the council in developing a more formal atmosphere for council meetings, encourage relationship building regionally, assisting the mayor and council in representing Lapine.
Okay.
So, to go a little bit further, we're extremely pleased to be able to provide this evaluation. We are confident in our city manager. We have a great deal of admiration for the hard work that he puts in and all of the time. However, we are going to encourage him, as we have so stated. And we see great things ahead of us. And I'd like to say thank you very much, Stephen.
Thank you.
For all your hard work.
Appreciate it.
All right.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
Now,
do we get to party now?
Yeah, party.
I'm partying for all of us.
All right. I like being here, and I like fun, and I tell you what I really like about this job is every place I've ever been, I've been a placeholder. You know, there were 20 people before me. I came in, everything was kind of constructed. You know, you did a little, you added a little bit, you subtracted a little bit, you modified it, but you really didn't have a clean slate. You know, and you didn't get to invent. And you didn't get to wake up every day and be just saying to yourself, wow, you know, how do we do that? What do we do? And I've used the analogy, it's a lot like Lindbergh crossing the Atlantic and hoping you make it to France. Was that a sputter I just heard? And I like the council, and I like the people in this community. And yeah, I feel if all the things that were just said are absolutely true. I'd like to be out more and about. I think there's there's a hesitancy to do things on a broader basis, because I'm sort of the belief charity begins at home, you know, and so is the house in order. And if the house is ordered, then you can stroll out. But, you know, I still have this hesitancy that the house isn't in order. And I say that every day when I go to look and do something, we haven't done it yet. For instance, what was I just doing here this last couple hours? We don't have any fencing standards for our city. So anybody can put up, they can put up a 20-foot fence all the way around their house. And there was not a thing we could do about it. And, you know, so when do you do those fencing standards? Well, yeah, we need to do them now. So that's what I'm doing. But I'd like to do things more regionally, and I certainly like to be a good ambassador for our community. I thought I did a little bit of that with that recent Oregon broadcast. Mm-hmm. That was fun. Mm-hmm. That was fun. It was fun for all of us that participated in that. And I thought we did a lot by that to let people know the Lapines here. And I think we're going to do some of that with Ashton Eaton. Certainly when we put those signs up, when we do something at our portals, that'll help send a message. And I do. I want to get out and go to some of these events. And particularly for land use planning. You know, remember the American Institute of Certified Planners. I haven't got any of my credits yet this year because I haven't gone to any events. Because again, I'm just thinking, well, I need to take care of business at home first, but would like to do all those things. So, you know, it's just trying to find that balance, and that balance is hard. It just is. But it's fun, too. I mean, truly, a lot of times, I'm just sitting here going, okay, what are we going to do next? And I go look in the mirror, and the mirror says, okay, what are you going to do next? Yeah. But I love you, people. I love you, dude. And I feel like this is a family. This is a good place for me.
Good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bob, why don't you come up here and have a seat at the table? You bring him, too. There's a chair here for that.
You're going to sit there? Okay.
I'm fine right here. That's fine.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council, for the chance to speak with you again. We've got a few questions at Parks that we hope that you can help us answer. And one of the reasons this came up was that I was thinking and reflecting on the fact we're going to spend all the money on beautifying the front of our City Hall as we come into town, and I agree with that and think it's a great idea. But when I drive down Huntington, the first thing I see in our park at Heritage Park usually is teenagers smoking, and it doesn't set a very good tone for myself or for our city. And so I started working with the board and parks about our smoking policy, and as we further developed our conversation, there's a little bit of, I guess, unclarity about what parks, what part of the park we actually own and what part we don't own, and how we can really help. And I know Dan sees this every day. We've got a wonderful new little covered picnic area by the place that the Cohort 2 put in, but unfortunately it is a gathering spot. Even as I came down here tonight, there's kids standing on top of the tables, and we are seeing lots of litter and vandalism every day. And unfortunately we don't have the resources with two staff and myself who be out there. Although we do have a guy that works for us on a work program that he picks up litter every day for at least an hour out there. So, number one, before I can say to these guys, no smoking, I don't know if that really is the policy, and then do we have control of that whole park or not. And number two, I think it's more a city issue not to reach into your pockets, because that's not what I'm here for, but to more raise your awareness of it. We've worked with the county sheriffs, and they promised to help us with response time, which they've done when they can. But I do know just yesterday a young person went into A, stole the hatchet, and decided to take it to our new park benches. So we're losing equipment at a pretty rapid pace over there. And I just kind of wanted to know, number one, what are the boundaries that we actually own? And number two, is there an ordinance in the city about smoking? If we don't own that part of the park, will you guys join me in saying nobody should be smoking around a playground? Because that's really the way we feel about it. So that's what I'm here for.
At events, too, sometimes the marijuana gets pretty heavy.
Yeah.
Well, I would raise my finger, but you canceled my finger raising. Let me suggest. If I'm not mistaken, Heritage Park is that park that's on Huntington that's right next to the library, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, this is my understanding. As part of the BLM land swap, which is in the process of happening right now, the city will become the recipient of is somewhere around 3 3/4 acres of land, which would include the park and the library. And right now, as I understand from Phil Paterno, who is the person that's helping us do this, who's with BLM, there was a lease arrangement with BLM and the Park and Recreation District that was crafted around 2000. And then around 2005, the library district assumed that lease arrangement with BLM. So right now, the library controls the 3 3/4 acres through lease arrangement with BLM. But one of the things that has to occur as part of the conveyance is that the library district will enter into a lease arrangement with the city that I will bring here to the council. And I assume that as part of that, then we can discuss, you know, conditions that need to be in the agreement and responsibilities either on the part of the leasor or the leasee. And I would imagine that that's all going to occur within the next few months. So that's kind of the status. We don't have control of that land yet. It's still with BLM. We have to go through a number of processes before we finally have assumption of it. But as part of that, there needs to be this lease arrangement that shifts from the library and BLM to city, either with the library or the Park and Recreation District. Okay. And we'll figure that out when that comes along.
I think what it, excuse me, go ahead, Steve.
Wasn't there, I remember attending a meeting of the Park and Rec Board of Directors when the former director, Justin Cutler, was there, and they developed their park rules, park regulations. So, and I believe that was in there.
Yes, but then my question was, if we don't actually own that park, one of my choice was we're going to start putting up signs and trying to enforce it, but then when the question of ownership of the park came up, I wanted to make sure I wasn't stepping on toes by trying to enforce the park rule if it's not really a park rule property, and that's all I came
for. It's not the city's property, so.
Yeah.
Anything that would be done, my guess would be is you'd have to go to the library district, where they hold a lease with BLM and they're the controllers of it, and until we take over.
Yeah, that's fine.
And I do have a copy of that lease arrangement.
I'd love to have a copy. And so I guess that's really what we came for, other than just to kind of let you know we're trying our best to, you know, keep those kids engaged with construction still finishing up. It's a challenge, and you know, we're just trying to have a conversation of what would you guys like to be doing other than what you're doing right now. But you know, some kids that works with, and some kids it doesn't, but the guy's vandalizing our property, they broke a couple tables, and they're just going at it out there. I just wanted to come in and check in with you and let you know and say that we wanted to know about the ownership, but now we know, and I thank you for your time.
Well, but I think we still need to put a strong message out there that the city is supporting our Park and Recreation District by a strong denouncing of the activity that's going on there, because that's unacceptable that they're doing that.
Sure.
One thing that the community needs to know is that we're working together.
I agree with
to
you.
Do that. It's not like we're saying no, we're washing our hands up.
No, I completely agree, and that's what I'm hoping to do as we get to know each other more, is become partners, because we can't do this alone in any community, whether it's a large one or a small one. We've got to be in this together.
Related to this, we've heard recently that the city is, I mean, the county is doing some kind of a survey to see what smoking situation is in different communities. Is that not right?
That's partially right. Their study was to really help them make a decision about passing rules regarding smoking in public places.
Well, from what I gathered, they're gathering information about what cities are doing so the county can decide what to do. Is that it, or?
I never understood that.
Okay, well, I don't know either, but it seems like the timing is right to perhaps try to either get some input or learn something from what they're doing, you know, if they're doing something with that, because it might give us, we might learn what other cities are doing for the same problem, or something. You know, I don't know, there might be some information there.
Well, I think there's also a state law now that's been passed that there's no smoking allowed in any public
building.
Or property.
No, I don't think property.
Buildings.
Yeah. But within so many feet of an entrance. Is
10 feet.
10 feet.
Feet.
You have to have it posted on the door.
Right. Yes.
And that, when we dealt with this at Portland Parks, we had 10,000 acres of parkland, and we knew it would be folly to say no smoking in a park, but what we did say is no smoking in a playground area, because we felt like people could help manage that, and that covered shelter, happily enough, is right next to the playground area, but the other gathering spots across the park, and you know, that's not going to help.
Mr. Mayor. Would it be possible some way to get that message to the schools and ask them to pass on the information that the vandalism that's going on and the smoking that's going on is just unacceptable, and if they have to act that way, maybe they should find someplace else to play. I mean, it seems not right to me for the community to invest volunteers' time and money building something nice for the kids, and then have the kids come along and tear it down to where.
Well, that's what it's upsetting.
it's open space, but this thing back to smoking. I saw some emails about a presentation they were going to do in the county building. I think it happened while I was gone. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And they made a presentation about, do you have some information?
I didn't get to go to that, but I was in the first meeting, and they were talking about open air, non-smoking areas, such as non-smoking neighborhoods, total neighborhoods. So I don't know. They were trying to look at a different group of challenges that they gathered as they went around, but I've got to get a copy of that final report. I wasn't able to go to that, but if we can get that, that may put something more in here we could use. Yeah.
And I think I would just recommend that was done by the health department, the county health. Scott, forget his last name, but the director was led that charge.
Okay.
So you might turn to them to get a report of what that meant to them and where they're going with it.
Yeah, that might give us an extra tool of the police if they had something on record that the county's moving that direction. So.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you very
so much for your
Bob
time.
For coming.
Okay.
Just one more thing, and that is, I don't know what we can do about smoking now, but if there's some vandalism over there, I'm going to send you over, along with the lease agreement, Joe DeLuca's phone number. Joe is sort of the area commander here. He's a sergeant. He lives here. And if there's issues with vandalism, then he can have his patrol officers keep some additional eyes on the ground?
Yeah, I've spoken with him, but that was prior to us receiving this little wave of... we had a guy, according to rumor, who had been just released from prison in his early 20s show up, and all this trouble started, and he's supposedly back in prison now. But he spawned a little following, evidently, while he was out. So, yeah, rough stuff. But, okay, thank you.
Thank you. Item 7 is a discussion about sewer and water policy. The city has inherited whereby Lapine residents continue to receive monthly billing in certain circumstances after their water has been turned off.
Just a second, we're going to give me a copy here. And then I'll just explain the policy as it is now, and then you have a copy. I typed up a copy of this sort of an analysis this morning on this whole thing. When a person loses their property in Lapine, and they can lose it by determining to walk away from it, or they can be evicted. And if they do so, then the policy, and let me say this, in July, we took over the sewer and the water district, and we said we would embrace the sewer and water district policies until such times as we saw something that maybe we wanted to review, and if we did, then we would start that process. And so this is sort of the first policy that I'm asking you folks to either affirm that it's a good policy, or maybe we want to tweak it somehow one or another. But right now, if a person no longer has their property, generally they stop paying their mortgage. And we have a policy that if you do not pay your utility bills, that after 60 days we'll shut your water off. And when we shut your water off, we charge $100 for shutting it off. Okay. And so if you walk away from your property, then we continue to charge you for sewer and water, even though it's shut off and you no longer live there. And we charge approximately $52 a month for sewer and water. And then in addition, because you're not paying, we also charge a late fee for sewer and water, and that's $5 each. So essentially, for a residential property that has their water shut off, we continue to charge about $62 a month. And we'll charge this, and if after 5 or 6 months of non-payment, then there's another late fee that gets kicked in. It's 1.5% per month rather than $5 for sewer and $5 for water. And generally after a few months, the bank will contact us, or the lender, whoever it is, and say, is there any arrears? And of course there are, because we've been charging. And generally they pay. They'll pay about 90%, historically about 90% of the time the bank will pay. And if they don't pay, then the policy is just to eat the cost, just to forego the cost. When there is all of this going on where you're charged $52 a month and you no longer live in the house and the water's turned off and you have no access to sewer, we have a policy that says we don't report you to a credit agency. So the only people that know that you haven't paid is the city and yourself. And then when the bank inquires and we tell them there's these outstanding fees, and like I said, 90% of the time they go to pay for it, And the reason I think they're motivated to pay is because there's lien authority with sewer, and they don't want to be having some lien encumbrances at the same time they're trying to turn around and sell the house. So in a sense, we kind of hold them hostage to pay because they don't want the alternative. And then I said to Ashley, can you tell me, Ashley, how many, because the council's going to want to know this, they're going to want to know what the financial impact is if we were to discontinue this policy. And it's, right now it's roughly $815 a month, about $9,800 a year that we would not receive in the way of revenues if we discontinued this policy. I don't know if you want to discontinue it or not, but you know, in my mind there's some unfairness to it, and there's some sort of, I like to use the word shakedown cruise, to the banks. They're kind of obligated to pay this anything that the person no longer lives there. I would suggest that if you're interested in doing away with this policy or modifying it, that you don't make it retroactive. I mean, we've only been in the sewer business here for a few months. I don't think we're responsible for the actions and activities of the sewer district and water district. And also, I don't think it should apply to someone that's in arrears who hasn't left their house. You know, someone that just decided not to pay their bill, and you know, let's say they're a snowbird and they head to Arizona for the winter and they just haven't paid, I think they should be obligated to that fee. So I'm just throwing it out there. This is not an action item, this is just a discussion item, but I suspect we're going to have more of these sewer and water policy things that we're going to need to wrestle with over time, and this is just the first one that came up.
Kathy?
I don't know, Steve, if I'm doing apples and oranges or whatever on that house. That house originally was
which house?
A short sale.
Which house?
The Riley.
Okay.
The Riley one you're talking about.
Well, it's been brought to me before. Oh. That was just the latest sale.
Latest one, I know, okay. But what I'm trying to, let me get through the...
Okay, sure.
Then it was sold, they had a chance to sell it, and this family decided, no, we're not going to short sale, we're going to take it back and claim, what's the next one? Foreclosure. Yeah. So that to me throws in something else too, is in a sense they're still in control. That would have switched hands, been done, and moved on. So how does that ever enter into that? Are we concerned about that? Is that just an extra load we don't carry?
I don't have an absolute right answer for you. It's just, you know, my thought is if you walk away, you know, because a lot of these people, they paid $250,000 for the house, and now it's worth $100,000, and so everybody's saying, look, you're going to pay this huge mortgage on $250,000 for the rest of your life, and it'll never ever be worth it. And a lot of people just say, the heck with it, I'm going to walk away because, you know, it's made easy to walk away. And once they walk away, then they don't want to pay their utility bill either. And, you know, I don't know if you should, if it's a big deal to continue charging them or not. I just don't know. Because the thing is, if they don't pay it, we don't make them pay it. And if they don't pay it, we don't tell the credit bureau that they didn't pay it. So, you know, there's not a whole heck of a lot of consequences if you don't pay it. But on the other hand, I'm a believer that if we're going to have a policy or a practice or something, that there has to be a basis in fact. And the very first thing that we did when we looked at this policy was to say, okay, can we find it any place? Can we find it in a resolution or an ordinance? or anything, and we couldn't find it there. And so then it kind of been was, well, we're doing it, and we're making money off of it, but we don't have a basis, in fact, for doing that, and, you know, it just became troubles.
Dan?
First of all, if there is something like that that's a policy, the user is entitled to know that up front when they sign up for water. They're entitled to know what the policies are. You can't just say, well, this is the way we do things. They need to know when they sign up, what risk they're taking, or when they buy a home, whatever it is. And then the other thing is, how can we turn the water off? Like she says, you know, she didn't pay her bill, so it got turned off. She claims she was continued to be charged. To me, that does make no sense. How could we charge, if we turn the water off, how can we charge beyond that? How could we stack up debt after the turnoff? That, well, I've never, the power doesn't do that.
No, and I guess to compound that, you know, I mean, first of all, it's quizzical why we would do that. But then what is bothersome is because they don't pay it, then the bank just knocks on our door and says, you know, we've received this back. Are there any outstanding payments? Oh, yeah, by the way, here's all this money you owe us, plus interest. You know, you know. And I think it's unfair to the banks, not that I'm a great believer that I have a love for banks, but nonetheless,
it's dishonest.
It just seems bothersome. The whole thing just seems bothersome. I guess that's the bottom line. I don't know if it's right or wrong and different, but I don't like it.
Don?
What would be the financial impact if we, after we cut off the water, we no longer charge them? And actually, if they're not going to pay, what's wrong with turning it over to a collection agency and letting them go after them? I mean, I have to pay my water and sewer bill every month. And I just feel that every other bill, too, and I just feel that that's just right.
Well, we could, what we do, I guess we could, for the time that they haven't paid, up until we turn the water off, we could turn that over to
right.
a collection
agency. Right, that amount only, and then stop charging.
And then stop charging.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that.
That sounds good.
Does that make reason?
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a standard way people usually
use. Well, you know, I manage a water district, and that's what we do. You know, and then we wait for the bank to come, and then we bill the bank, because they have the house. We tell them what is owed, because they're the one that in effect who own the house.
And you only charge them for up till you turn the water off.
Right, just after okay. we turn the water off, we wait for the bank. We actually pursue the bank. We actually find out who the bank is, and it's not hard to do. And we send them a letter.
May I get a copy of the letter you send them?
Okay.
Okay. So maybe that's an option. We either turn it over to collection agency, or we pursue the bank, and we get the outstanding balance due. Okay.
Well, it would depend on whether the bank owns the money, or like you say, they're snowbirds. There's two different things there. I mean, if they're snowbirds, they own the house, and they're going to be back next summer. That's different than if I lose my house and the bank is taken away from me. There's two different things. You have to have a policy for both.
Well, and that's why I said, let me just read it. It's on the last page. It says, I would suggest if the council chooses to discontinue this policy, it should not apply to any person in arrears where they cannot demonstrate the house or business property has been abandoned or they have been evicted from the property for non-payment. So unless they can demonstrate, unless there can be some demonstration that it's no longer with these folks, then it should still be there with them, the obligation to pay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, do you not have the opportunity, if you're going south for the winter, to have your water turned off and not be charged during that time period until you come back?
No. We're still charging you.
What value are they getting?
And maybe that's another policy we need to look at.
What value are we giving them for that monthly payment?
What one of the things is we charge them also.
Okay.
Monthly. And the
The reason we do, because we maintain the system, we maintain it ready for them, and they're part of the paying system. Okay. And they're going to be back. They still own the property, you know. They want their water generally turned off for the winter because they don't want water in their lines.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So we will turn the water off for a fee, and we'll turn it back on for a fee. And then we still bill them the minimum charge.
So they're not really off. They're really not turned off. I mean, they're really part of still on.
They're still part of the system. However, once they identify that their house has been repossessed, we turn the water off, and then we wait to identify the bank, and then we collect from the bank.
For the ongoing period.
For the ongoing period.
So that's not what you said a while ago.
But do you?
You said you only charge to the point when it's turned off.
No, I was talking about for the people that are there. What I mean, if I
the
didn't say that,
yeah. Versus the
well, the people with the bank.
Okay.
You know, when they're repossessed, we had two houses repossessed in our water district.
Okay.
And so when we only charge them up to the time that they've demonstrated that they no longer own the house, and we turn the water off.
Well, if we're going to charge the snowbirds all the time that they're gone south, why wouldn't we charge the bank after we shut off their water until somebody moves into the house? I mean, it's the same kind of
a same thing.
We're talking the same thing, right?
We're charging for a service we're not giving them.
Right, exactly.
That's not right.
Or there's so many homes out there that are in sticky wicket areas, just like if this family had a chance to move on and sell the home and they didn't, they're still controlling that house. So it's not like they're actually gone. They decided when the bank offers, say the bank offered them, okay, come back in and we'll work this out with you. By then they're so ticked off, they don't want to deal with it.
But the valve has been turned off.
Valve.
The fee has either been paid when it turned off or turned on, I'm not sure. When that's turned off, they're not receiving service. Either way, no matter what you do, whether it's a bank or doesn't matter who owns it, if that's turned off, they're not receiving water service. They're not putting wear and tear on the pumps. You know, I just...
Like a discounted fee for a maintenance fee, perhaps, during the times snowbirds. Go back to snowbirds.
Well, if they're living in the house and there's no water and sewer connected, how can they do that? And this is basically what it sounds like. You're telling us that they had a chance to sell it, they didn't sell it, and they still own the house, so evidently they're either living in it or somebody else is living in it or something.
It's been vacant.
It's vacant?
Yeah. For about a year and a half now.
Well, that must be a tidy sum they owe.
But do we even want to get into that level of it?
Well, that's mm-hmm. what I'm...
That's a policy.
Yeah.
I mean, but do we want to? I mean, do we want to determine whether, well, they should have sold it and they didn't? Well, we shouldn't be messing with that.
No.
And if it's been foreclosed on, you know, we've turned the water off. We've done our part. We build them up to the point of time we turn the water off. But we need to verify in some fashion that it's been foreclosed on.
That's right. We need something from the bank that states exactly where it stands.
Or we keep billing them until they provide us a document that says the house has been foreclosed on.
Right.
And then from that point on, and I'm only saying that because we still have to maintain a system that would carry that house.
But what system? Because
the whole water system.
You're only maintaining to the meter.
But when the water gets turned back on, we have a system that will supply them water.
And then
all you're doing is turning the valve, right?
Oh yeah.
Pretty
much. Turn on a meter.
So you turn the valve and the water goes right by it. So you're going to charge them for the maintenance of the valve when they turn it.
The valve wears out when you turn it.
I'm going to let...
Thank you, Ken. Kitty Shields, 51540 Shields Drive. I'd like to suggest that the city establish a facilities charge, like the electric company does, to cover exactly what Ken is talking about. You're on the grid. You're on that system. You have the advantage of having it there available to you all the time. And so even when not using it, it's there for you, and you have to pay your part in maintaining it. I would suggest that that would be lower than, you know, the monthly minimum charge for water and something different for sewer. Also, this would cover those few properties. I know there's at least one because I own one of them. I own it. Where there is no longer a structure. It was an old house that was removed. So there's no service. There's nothing going to that. But I pay the full water and the full sewer every month on that.
But that's a phantom billing that we charge.
Well, then I'll give you a phantom check.
We have a phantom billing.
Phantom clause.
And I certainly, you know, I'll be glad to pay. Well, I'm not paying anyway, but there's more fair charge. Facilities charge than the full usage charge. Anyway, if you look at your electric bill, I think you'll see that that's what the electric company does.
Thank you, Kitty. Stu?
Thank you.
Well, then we have to, you know, are we going to do that? Let's see. Okay, but the electric, no, that's different. I'm trying to think.
Could we?
Well, if they cut the power line to my meter, I don't pay that. I don't pay the facilities charge. If they pull my meter base, I don't think I pay it.
No, I don't think so. No.
But don't they need the heat for the structure during the winter anyway? They don't.
This is a free country. You don't have to heat your house. You know, it's. I do. Pay for product or service.
Well, okay. I mean, this is like, yeah.
But you have, with the water and sewer, you have your SDCs. And keeping a certain amount of your bill paid
right. Keeps
that so that when you put your place back into use, you don't have to pay that SDC. So that's a little bit different from the power.
So you pay the SDCs and you continue to pay monthly.
Well, my SDCs are covered. For instance, my place, it's covered. But if I were to never pay anything again after a certain period of time, if I were to build on that property, I would have to pay the SDCs. But if I keep paying a certain charge month after month, then I can rebuild at any time, and I don't owe the SDCs. It's all
right. Roger, Hattie.
Well, one of the things you've got that Steve has access to is that the League of Oregon Cities, we have policies of 200 cities. So there's probably, I can think of 10 different policies used by that, but I'd suggest in order for the council to set a policy like that, you know, look at four or five different communities.
Yeah.
Our own community basically went, we told you 60 days shut off. You don't pay a bill, but you pay a reconnection fee. And as Kitty said, if you don't reestablish that use within 2 years, you pay SDC again. And nobody wants to do that. So that most people establish use, continue the use, and goes. But that's just one of 10 or 12 policies. Probably be easier for you to think, what should we do, by comparing three or four different ones like yours. We actually, in the case of Snowbirds, shut it off and didn't charge, but when they reconnected, it was unless you were gone 6 months or 5 months, it was quite a reconnection fee. It's our actual cost of running out there. But I think most cities do charge, even though the electric companies sometimes amortize it. The bigger picture, most cities and sewer and water districts charge to make it's either a one-time charge or a monthly charge to make sure you're paying your fair share of building the treatment plant and everything. Because when they get ready to use it,
yeah.
You know, that's that you've got to build it in advance, and so you have property payment, but most of us did it in a lump sum.
Yes, SDCs.
Could I suggest to the council that we follow this advice and have the city manager go off and bring it back to another work session, our next work session?
Sounds good.
Aren't we getting a rate analysis too coming in? I wonder if they're going to address an issue like that, or does that not, is that not included in that?
I think that would be an operational type issue what we would have within the city to deal with, and I don't think that would be RCAC's idea of bringing that along to us.
No. This just seemed like there was an inequity here that needed to be looked at.
I have a problem with it.
And
we can
again,
do better.
It begs a broader question, and that is just our practices for charging for various services rendered. And I could see us making this really big. For now, I want to just address this policy. And then as other ones need to be attended to, we'll look at those as well. I'm kind of in Dan's court that, you know, somebody's not using something, and unless there is a real need for financing to sustain the operation, do we really need to overly impact it? You know, maybe there is some minimal fee that's less than the monthly maintenance or operation that they pay. If they advise us in advance they're going to be leaving town and going to Arizona for 6 months or something.
Okay.
I think we exhausted that one, maybe.
Yeah, we did. Item 8 is is a discussion about hiring Kittleston and Associates to help the city with 2016-2018 STIP grant application that is due in November. If the city manager wouldn't mind, we chatted about this a little this afternoon, and it was quick and direct, and it made sense.
Okay, well, here's the deal. You know, the ODOT has something called STIP, which is a
state investment.
Yeah, some kind of state transportation investment process where there are monies that are available from time to time. And we just went through a STIP process for 2012 and 2015. And we applied for some monies for a pathway that we did not get. But then on the other hand, we received $70,000 for here in front of City Hall with those STIP money. So that's what they're there for. They're transportation dollars that are available to jurisdictions on a competitive basis. And we have another round that's coming up. And the round is for 2016 through 2018. But the cutoff date for applying for the grant application is about 30 days out. And so we have this pretty onerous grant application that needs to be filled out between then and now. And I'm saying, okay, we want to make sure that we're competitive. And so how do we do that in such a short time frame? And so I talked first to Chris Doty, who's the transportation director for Deschutes County, and asked him if we couldn't do something in a teamwork fashion, and he said, yeah, that would be great. And then we sat down and we talked to Gary Farnsworth to see if maybe ODOT could be also a team player, because more people that apply for a grant application, the greater the likelihood that you'll get some money. And ODOT said that they would help sponsor the grant application. And then my thinking, and Bob got away, but that maybe we'd have the Park and Recreation District as well, so we'd have four players applying for these monies. And then as I talked to Chris and I talked to Gary, the thought was, well, there's probably going to be about $12 to $20 million available to Region 4 as part of this next grant round. And we might be able to carve out a portion of it, but probably not a big portion because we're competing with Redmond and Bend and, you know, everyone else, Sisters, for these proceeds, and Deschutes County as well. So the thought was, well, let's apply for something that's really practical that we really need. And the thought was, well, let's apply for a grant application for, again, for that pathway that we talked about before this spring, and also for sidewalks from Huntington to 97 on First Street, and then on the west side of Highway 97 from First Street down to 6th Street. And that would be our application. I'm just talking out loud because that's kind of where I'm going with this. And that would probably, we'd probably apply for $1 million worth of grant application. But we need to hurriedly put this together. And Chris has offered up Peter Russell, who is his transportation planner, to help compose the grant application. But also, Peter's going to need some help. And because Kittleson & Associates was the one that did our corridor study, and they're the one that's doing our transportation system plan now, they have knowledge and expertise about all this stuff, and they've already researched all of it. So I talked to Kittleson & Associates and said, Joe Bestman over there, you know, would you be receptive to helping us construct a grant application that's due in about 30 days, relying upon all that stuff that you already have in your portfolio, and working with Peter Russell? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, what would it cost? And he said he didn't think it'd cost very much. And I'm thinking $1,000 or $2,000. Okay. But that's kind of where I wanted to go, and I wanted to make sure that everybody kind of was thinking about that grant application, and that that would be what we would do with the money, and that we would do this teamwork kind of a strategy, and just trying to get some feedback. What you think about that?
I think it's good to be looking forward like that, that we're kind of, the system makes us do that. You know, that you said this goes through 2018.
Yeah.
This is monies, yeah.
Yeah, so we would not get these monies till 2016, and you might say, oh, well, we're so busy right now, let's just forget about it. But I got to tell you, you know, I don't know how many more little nest eggs might come our way, and I see this as really important for economic development. It's because as you look at our sidewalks or lack of them on Highway 97, it makes a statement about our community. And I want a real strong statement about, you know, we have everything here, and that's demonstrated by here's sidewalks and all the attributes that go with it. And so.
Well, we've been talking about beautification. We've had the studies, all the stuff about the corridor and all that. So it seems to me like what you're targeting fits, and we just don't have a lot of time to fool around with it.
Yeah.
November 27th, right? Yeah.
If I could input here, you know, I go to the COAC meetings, and let me quantify this for you. The state has come up with a whole new program for ODOT money.
Yes.
STIP is now that program. There are no more monies.
Okay.
Every nickel of ODOT money is going into this STIP program. And the STIP is made up of two features. Enhance, mm-hmm. which means build sidewalks, that kind of stuff, and fix it.
Improved, yeah.
And that means fix what you got out there. Mm-hmm. So the money they collect, this 200 and I don't know how many million dollars plus, has been cut into two pieces, and then it's then cut into the six regions. And that's why when it gets down to this region, four, there's only about $18 million was the last number I got. And that is for everything. It's not for just, well, here we got a little to fix this or that. No, it is for anything a city needs, and it's competitive. And if you don't apply for it, you're gonna wait until the next STIP comes out. And they've actually pushed this whole STIP thing together. We had the first one, and then all of a sudden they threw in the second one. Mm-hmm. Now we won't see another STIP for a while, but it's behooves us to make this move just to stay up to speed.
Well, if what you're saying is right, then the Wickiup Junction funding has to come out of that too?
My understanding is that is correct in part, that they're going to be looking to, but that is going to be in there. But the state, or Gary Farnsworth told me that in this go around, that yes, some of that STIP money would be available for that overpass, but that they also were going to look for more federal monies for that because it's of a regional concern that goes beyond this county. I mean, the railroad is benefited by this. The freight industry is benefited by this. It's the last grade crossing, grade separation on 97. A lot of people want it taken care of.
Another aspect of that is they are actually spending $3 million. They found $3 million to put into Wickiup so that they could get it to federal government standards of shovel ready.
Okay.
And the first monies they intend to look at to be spent out of a federal stimulus or money will be one of two projects in the state that have that much money tied to it, which is about a $22 million plan. So there's another one that's out there also.
And what about our light? Because that, if we don't get our light, is that going to come out of that?
No, that light is out of another fund.
Okay.
Okay. I'm praying it's out of another fund. Right now they have about $400,000 allocated toward the $1.3 million that's going to cost.
Okay, because that's a priority in my mind, because if the economy comes alive and if we start doing some economic development work here, that light is going to be a real problem for us. We can't get those jobs here.
They say they're going to find that money, that $1 million.
Outside of the STIP, so we don't
outside
have to go,
of the STIP.
We don't have to go including.
I've had that said to me.
Okay.
Yeah, and I've been going to the meetings. They're about every 6 weeks on that first and read in 97. Just to make sure that our voice is heard at that table.
Good.
But I'm left with the impression that they're going to make an effort to continue. Okay.
Good.
It's amazing how they're able to find these millions of dollars.
I know.
They were just throwing away the quarter over there. Nobody knew about it.
They have it in an offshore account.
Steve, do you... So you're asking us to consider this for the next regular session?
No, I just more or less, because if it's only going to be $1,000 or $2,000, I can just go ahead and say take care of it. I don't need a council action to do that. But on the other hand, I have this agreement with you folks. If I'm going to spend money, I want you to know about it.
I think we need to go in that direction.
And so unless you've got some objection, then I'm just going to go ahead and do this.
That's good.
Okay.
But again, the other reason is we want to do it while the getting's good, because by the time we meet again, which is November 14th, I mean, we're within 10 days. So I'm planning to meet with ODOT and Deschutes County Friday here.
Okay.
And you're welcome to come. I think it's 1 to 3. And we're just going to put together a strategy, and that's going to be the strategy. And I'm going to be able to say to them, I've run this by the council, and the council endorses.
Absolutely.
All right.
With that, I'll ask for public comments. Any public comments? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And as far as an executive session, the city manager has said that wasn't necessary at this point, and therefore we will move on to, we'll take 5 minutes, 2 minutes.
If you don't mind, I think I'll head across the mountain to see if it's snowing again.
I think I would like to ask the council to thank Roger for his tremendous work.
He was a great help to Don and I today as we worked in this effort.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.